This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
So 7:45 in the morning, and you're with Ibrahim Sunny and myself, Julian Ng, and we are talking business. And what's coming up on the Breakfast Grill that's happening after the 8 a.m. news is Salil Shetty, who's the Secretary General of Amnesty International, which is one of several co-chairs for the World Economic Forum on ASEAN, which begins tomorrow. Of course, the themes that are being talked about is shaping the ASEAN agenda for inclusion and growth. They have three pillars of the program. Number one, driving sustainable growth and social inclusion. Number two, mastering the fourth industrial revolution. And number three, strengthening what regional relationships are. Now, if you want to know what the fourth industrial revolution is, and what, in fact, for that matter, was what the first three industrial revolution, take note of this and listen to the Breakfast Grill that comes up after the 8 a.m. news. Salil Shetty, Secretary General of Amnesty International, will be talking to Sharad Kutan. Now, back on to business news. We have AirAsia. They are getting a $1.5 billion US dollar offer for their leasing company.
Yeah, so the leasing company that AirAsia has right now, the offer is to buy its aircraft leasing company. And this is despite the surge in the business of the AirAsia in this region. AirAsia's shares actually shot up because of this news, and AirAsia plans to divest the business at some point. This is what Tony Fernandez has said to Bloomberg TV yesterday. But I guess leasing planes can be highly lucrative.
Now, these AirAsia Group's shares were so beleaguered last year, and I think it's just beginning to dawn on investors that, hey, they are going to benefit a lot from the cheap oil prices. And so the AirAsia stock prices, the group, both AA and AAX, have been on a tear recently. I suppose this kind of news will go in some small measure to boost share prices up further. In fact, yesterday, as a result of this rumor, the share price was for AirAsia was very strong as well.
Yeah. So the rumor became news, and investors are indeed reacting to this. And of course, speaking about the leasing business of aircrafts, it can be, one can argue, more lucrative than running an airline. It has prompted a lot of conglomerates. For instance, Hong Kong billionaires Lee Ka-shing, Cheng Yutong has also entered the industry in terms of leasing. In fact, the newly created Malaysian Aviation Group, the parent of Malaysia Airlines Berhad, which is formerly known as Malaysia Airlines System, MAS, as of 19th May this month, have created a special pillar called Aircraft Leasing to actually look into this further. So you have MAB Leasing and, of course, MAB Pesawat, both of them are aircraft leasing companies. They will help see if there is real money in this and hopefully can supplement a Malaysian Aviation Group.
You know, you may be right in saying that leasing may be more profitable than the airline business. Didn't Warren Buffett famously once said that he will buy any business in the world except for airlines? And I guess leasing is like being a bank, right? You fund the thing, and your revenue stream would be in the form of a kind of interest rate and depreciation charge as a business model. And this benefits the aircraft airline companies as well, because they can free up a lot of funds to then expand into other things instead of sinking in billions of ringgit to maintain a fleet.
Yeah, so when you talk about commercial aircrafts, the two big companies right now is Airbus and Boeing. So you could see the pivot of aircraft and Boeing towards more on defense now rather than commercial aircrafts, because they like leasing stuff with these airlines of the world. And yesterday, Boeing company actually is set to win about $3 billion US dollars contract from the UK MOD for Apache helicopters. Now, this news may seem unrelated to the leasing business, but it does prove a point that Boeing wants to focus more on defense rather than on commercial airlines in terms of direct sale. If it's anything commercial, they try to do it as on a leasing basis.
Now, related to the profitability of, I guess, the supply chain for transportation is MRO. MRO, which stands for Maintenance, Repairs and Operations. And there's news that Destiny Berhad has formed a locomotive-based maintenance MRO business and is bidding for about $250 million of worth of rail-based MRO jobs. So this is not aircraft, this is rail.
Yeah, so usually when we talk about MRO, in fact, if you Google search MRO, you're going to get aircrafts a lot. So the difference here is that Destiny Berhad Group MD, Datuk Rozabil Ar-Rahman, said that this rail-based MRO, not the aircraft, will be a new business for Destiny. And we know that Destiny is an established marine and aviation MRO company. So this is just taking the expertise from one industry and applying it in another fashion, which is under the rail business. And their biggest client will definitely be KTM or Kereta Pintaran Melayu.
Now, that's a perception that the rail service and the trains in Malaysia are quite decrepit. So this may be good business for them.
Yeah, I just took a train ride, I think maybe 4 months ago or 3 months ago, all the way to Penang. It is fantastic.
And really?
Yeah, it is.
That's good to know.
It is. And there's a lot of train enthusiasts on my Facebook friend page. I don't know why I'm friends with people who like kind of rail business, but Malaysia has rather good rail business. And I think for Destiny to actually invest heavily in MRO and partnering with KTM only means that the industry is going to grow bigger. And remember, high-speed rail is coming to town soon. Maybe not soon enough, but in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to get an hour ride train trip to Singapore, and MRO is going to be big for them.
Yeah, that's a different ballgame altogether, because that would be very modern trains. I mean, if you want a train to go at almost 200 to 300 kilometers an hour, that would be very different from the existing locomotives that we have right now.
Yeah. So, of course, MRO rail business is a rather closed industry. Not many players are there. In fact, the two or three big names include Rapid KL and KTM. There are other players, including SCOMI Group and PSI Intercontrol, In Control, Sdn Bhd, as well as SMH Rail. So once Destiny links up with KTM, they would be the sixth player in this business, and it will become, if you ask me, a rather crowded kind of space.
7:52 in the morning, and Nomura is worried about Malaysia's debt, Ibrahim.
Yeah, so Nomura Research has come up with a paper, and it was further elaborated by a former analyst of Nomura, Elevan Business Advisory founder Alistair Newton. And he says that an increase in Malaysia's private sector and corporate level debts may give rise to another round of financial crisis. And he's arguing that while Malaysia's economy is below the halfway mark of countries with high risk of falling into another financial crisis, he calls it is still vulnerable. Malaysia is still vulnerable towards a next financial crisis.
90% or 89%, if you want to be exact, is the household debt to GDP ratio. That's quite high, actually. And this is quite worrying because we are seeing a rise of interest rates, especially banks are raising their base rates, which would make debt servicing a lot more expensive.
This is very, very interesting, because while Malaysia's Malaysia's GDP ratio almost doubled from 2008-2015, the level of debt to GDP is still elevated at, you're right, 89%. And this makes Malaysia the highest household debts in the region, and the highest household debts, perhaps one of the highest in the world as well. And I don't know how we can come to terms with this, because according to this analyst, he's arguing that the financial crisis could be as big as the 1997 Asian crisis. However, there is a difference between the 97 Asian crisis with this new crisis risk.
Now, I can tell you the difference, because in 97, the debt was incorporated. You had corporations who had, and these are huge bellwether corporations, like people like Renault and so on, who had huge degrees of debt to the extent of 2, 3, 4 times the amount of capital. And it wasn't just Malaysia's problem. Thailand, Indonesia had the same thing, and it led to a lot of political repercussions, actually. And the difference today that is personal. The corporates have learned the lesson and they're pretty cashed up. And now on the household side of things, that's quite worrying.
Yeah. So to compare and contrast, our household debt in the region is actually fluctuating. Singapore, for instance, have a 75% household debt to GDP ratio. Thailand is as high as us, or close to be as high as us, about 82%. Indonesia, surprisingly, is extremely low at 70%. Now, I don't know how they measure this, but I think it still talks about how much personal or household debt is taken, and Indonesia might have low access to credit or consumer credit. Maybe that's the reason why it's that low. But on when we look at the consumer debt trending, consumers in Singapore are deleveraging for the first time in a decade, and this has made Singapore consumer debt shrink for the first time in a decade. So while we are growing steadily upwards, Singapore is, for the first time, is shrinking for the first time in a decade.
There's another dimension to this, because I'm reading more and more that machines and robots are taking away our jobs. And of course, the internet and online and digital age is a double-edged sword, because you can be replaced by a robot, right? And so more and more, this is going to add to the ability to service the loans. Income levels are coming down. The economy is kind of quite sluggish. Of course, the robotic phenomenon has not arrived at Malaysia's shores yet. We're still very labor dependent. But this is really something to think about. And I think that the idea of a living wage as a result of the mechanization of our jobs, right, is not a bad idea. Many countries are already thinking about how to supplement people's income.
Yeah, and while the mechanism of these automation of these jobs are impending, I think we still have a lead time to actually sustain ourselves and learn new skills before it arrives.
Okay, the other news that we have is a collection of bitcoins that's worth almost 50 million ringgit has been confiscated by Australia's police.
Yeah, and this confiscation by Australian police, they will be auctioned off next month. So about 25,000 bitcoins will be sold in mostly blocks of 2,000 batches, each with a net value of about £700,000 or about 4.1 million ringgit batches. And EY, the firm that is organizing the auction, Ernst & Young, they said that the bitcoin have been confiscated as proceeds of crime, but they did not elaborate the case. So I don't know about you, Joe. I think this is an easy way for the government to make money. It's just that easy. Confiscate the Bitcoin and sell.
I don't know. How do you confiscate Bitcoins? Because they are supposed to be anonymous and very secure, and they can link ownership quite easily, quite directly as well. But to really confiscate that, and quite a lot of bitcoins as well, I think this is something that is very interesting. And recently, of course, an Australian himself, Craig Wright, he claims to be Bitcoin's founder, Satoshi Nakamoto. That was a pseudonym that was being used. But he has declared himself to be Satoshi himself. So, many things happening in Australia on the Bitcoin front.
Yeah, of course. But so the story of Craig Wright, whether or not he is truly the Bitcoin creator, he has revealed it to some organizations, namely BBC, Economist and GQ. 2 or 3 days later, a lot of the Bitcoin community supporters are denouncing that claim, saying that they're skeptical of Craig Wright's claim to be the Bitcoin creator. But you're right, Australia is embroiled in Bitcoin controversy.
Now, of course, if you want to listen to some Bitcoin talks, we have done a lot of interviews on that, including from Garrick Hallman, who's the economic historian from the LSE, who's an expert in this kind of thing. Pick that up. Go to bfm.my to pick that up. It's a growing technology that would be increasingly adopted. The Breakfast Grill is coming up after the 8 a.m. news. Sharad Kutan will be talking to the Secretary General of Amnesty International, based on the World Economic Forum on ASEAN, which begins tomorrow. Salil Shetty, Secretary General of Amnesty International, will be talking to Sharad. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.